Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 249 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I'm again joined by Frances Tomás. How's it going, Frances?
It's going well. Hola, culés. Things are good. Things are good. Barça are winning, or we didn't really embarrass ourselves in Europe, so that's a plus. First time in 5 years, so hooray. We won against Huesca, and you know, things are looking up. How are you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready for a show full of positivity. I slipped in a little negativity there to talk about midway through the show, but we got a lot of positivity to talk about. And believe it or not, that does start with crashing out of Europe, believe it or not, because it wasn't a crash. It was a soft landing out of Europe this season, which is more than I think Koulet can say for the previous few seasons. And I think that is the big difference of how we're feeling, that Barca played the second leg like they probably should have played the first leg, and then they would have advanced. But they played the second leg in a way that Koulet can be proud of. They were clearly the better team, and the 1-1 scoreline doesn't matter as much. Missed chances, I think, don't matter as much. I'm going to explain why those missed chances are. Don't worry about those. That's a good sign more than it's a bad sign. But I think the biggest takeaway is that Ronald Koeman, just like he had gone against Sevilla to flip that tie, I guess it was a smaller remontada, if you will, against Sevilla, but by going with that three at the back in the 3-5-2 formation, PSG was even an extra wrinkle because Griezmann started in that match. But I guess the impressions I want to hear from you first, about, Frances, are what are your impressions of that three at the back going back to the PSG? So not so much Huesca, but against PSG, where Barcelona, whether it was Dest, Mingueza, Pedri, Busquets, it was by committee. They defended Mbappe better than they defended Galan from Huesca yesterday.
Yeah, for sure. I think the three at the back is a system that has been done because basically Piqué, who is injured at the moment, obviously, but definitely Sergio Busquets is more comfortable in. Also, it's a system that maximizes what Sergiño Dest and Jordi Alba can give you moving forward. Arguably, Sergio Roberto, when he's fit, he may go back to that right back, but who knows? But Mingueza, obviously justifying why Koeman has been trusting him. Let's not forget, this is someone who wasn't very highly rated in La Masia. He always did what he needed to do, and he is Catalan, and he is hardworking, and, you know, he is talented, but he's not one of those highly touted sort of superstars coming out of La Masia, like Gaia Suleen and, you know, what's his name? Simons and all of these people. You know, he's someone who has been coming through, doing the right thing, keeping his head down, being reliable when he needed to be, and now he's starting for the first team. Yeah. Obviously, there's been injuries to Gerard Piqué. Araujo has been injured as well. Luckily, he's coming back slowly but surely now. But in a normal world, Oscar Mingueza doesn't really get to start so many games for the first team. But then again, the world is really not normal these days. If there is something the world is not, is normal. So Mingueza has got a chance. He's grabbed it. He's gone ahead. I mean, he's very physical. He's fast. He's tall. He's confident. He's young. He's fresh. So he's establishing himself in a way that very few people even saw. I don't want to say not even himself saw it. Probably he did.
Yeah. But well, I can admit that I didn't. I actually have the stat for you that backs up my claim that I, for a long time, he was never one of on BarcaBlog.com when I would do the La Masia profiles in 2018 and 2019. I never profiled him. He was never one of the ones that I even considered because he wasn't for Barca B. Here's a stat. Mingueza, 3 seasons with Barca B, never getting promoted to the first team. He had 2,290 minutes, 0 goals, 0 assists. This year with the first team, he's played 2,123 minutes. So that is 170 or so minutes less this season for one season with the first team than he played in 3 years at Barca B. And in that time with the first team, while he had 0 goals and 0 assists for Barca B, 1 goal and 2 assists. He is performing at a level that he never did. Honestly, he never did. We're going back to the, I had to go back and I looked, and it was Cadet A and Cadet Bay. So when he was 14, 15 years old, 16 years old, that was the last time where he really was this kind of featured talent, where he was as important as you'd expect a player to finally reach the first team to be. So the stats and history do back up the fact that this is unprecedented. This is not Ish Mariba, who we're going to talk about later, but Ish Mariba was a guy that when he was 15 years old, as I said last week on the show, I could tell you, hey, this kid's going to be special. It may not be at Barca. He may not break through like he is. I'm even happy to see that Ish Mariba is breaking through at Barca, but I could have told you that he was going to be a professional football player. I could have told you that he was going to be in the first team somewhere in the Liga or PSG or some big club was going to always have Ish Mariba in it. But Mingueza, I didn't know. I thought, hey, he could be playing for Sabadell, which is, again, we bring your brother up plenty. There's no problem with being in Sabadell or Lleida for a long, long time, for 10 years, whatever it is, or Llagostera. It's okay that you play there. But he's playing for Barca's first team. And not only has he been playing for Barca's first team, but he was tasked to be the main guy to deal with Kylian Mbappe, the on-record fastest player in the world, and he did a good job. And, I mean, what more did you say to Mingueza? It's exciting that you have a player like this just continuing to break those boundaries and do it in the way he's doing it. And so now you have, I'm seeing Real Madrid Twitter, which, again, I don't really go on too much. I only get on when they get into our business. And they're saying that he looks like Sergio Ramos, which he does. He has similar hair. But he's looking like a young Sergio Ramos because he can play at the right back position, but he also probably is a real center back. So, no, we don't have Sergio Ramos on our hands, but it's funny to me that Real Madrid Twitter is coming into our camp to tell us that we have a player on our hands that looks like a young Sergio Ramos. It's funny.
That shows high intellect from the Real Madrid Twitter. I mean, next they're going to be saying that Aquaman is Sergio Ramos when he's retired.
Yeah.
I've got no words. But going back to what we're talking about, important things we're talking about, three at the back is a system that works. Mingueza obviously excelling. Lenglet, let's face it, he looks far less exposed in there, which is good. It's always going to be a positive. Obviously, with Gerard Piqué out, Koeman is trusting Frenkie de Jong at the centre-back, sort of at the heart, because he needs someone who really knows how to play the ball, can really control basically the back line. And, I mean, that to me is detriment to the whole team, because Frenkie de Jong is far more effective up front, or at least further up than obviously being the last player in the whole team. But it is what it is. While Gerard Piqué is injured, and I think that, you know, if it's adding solidity to the team, then so be it. And obviously, Busquets, he's been decent this season, to be honest. He's been better than the last, I would say, two seasons. He's probably the best one in the last 36 months that we've seen him. And he looks much more protected. He looks less lacking in terms of physicality. And that's tick, 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 tick. Plus, you know, Jordi Alba moving forward seems to be rejuvenated, which is great. And Sergiño Dest is much more protected when he moves forward. So it is a system that works. Having said all that, I don't think that it's a system we can use by default. I mean, if we're playing someone like Huesca at home, and I know we just did, it probably would be better to play a 4-3-3, which we did at times as well. But starting with three at the back by default, I don't think is the answer. But certainly against teams that, you know, they're going to present a challenge. And let's face it, we are not the best Barca in the last 15, 20 years, not even close. Then it's obvious that we're going to need to play like that sometimes. But it's good to have the option and it's good to see it working.
Well, I mean, I could easily argue that this maybe, I know that Valverde's La Liga teams won back-to-back La Ligas, but you could argue that the Barcelona since 2020 began, well, I think it's easy to argue, actually, that they've been arguably the best team in the world at the moment, and that's not hyperbole. Barca has gone 17 games without losing in the Liga, 14 wins and 3 draws. They have the best current unbeaten streak of any team in the 5 major leagues in Europe, the only team in the top 5 leagues not to lose in 2021. So when I say that they're the best informed team in the world, despite the loss of PSG the first time around, the truth is, at least domestically, that yes, they are. They're dominating in that competition in a way that no other club in any other top 5 league is dominating. And you did bring up a lot of good points, too. And the position of Frankie de Jong is one that I'm thinking a lot about, whether it was against PSG, where Barcelona dominated possession 72% to 28%. And while Pochettino, you know, it's a lot easier as a manager in the postgame when your team is the one that moved on to be complimentary of the opposition that you've just moved past. But he did say that, and you could see it, that the game plan was not to just dig in. PSG, they did not try to defend with 28% possession. Barca forced their hand, forced them in that situation. And Frankie de Jong being on that back line is a big part of that. And so I do wonder if Gerard Piqué does come back, if Koeman won't want to experiment with Gerard Piqué starting over Lenglet in that situation, because Lenglet is, I mean, I also would expect that Ronald Araujo is going to jump right back in and probably start for Lenglet. Yeah. With just the, again, it's unfortunate for him, Lenglet, the individual mistakes he has made, but it's a season that he's going to have to go back to the drawing board in the off season, whether he's sold or whether he stays, and iron those things out and figure out what role he has at the club moving forward. But having Araujo healthy, he's the starter. And then having Piqué healthy, he's a starter. And yes, if that pushes if that pushes Mingueza out of that starting lineup, well, that's a good problem to have. I'm glad that Barca have that problem. I do want to move up in terms of up the field. And we do talk about Frankie de Jong being almost a linchpin of what changes positionally. That if he's, it's odd enough that he hasn't really played the pivot. He's either played as an interior or he's played as a center back and not really in the middle, because Koeman is getting the best out of Busquets at the moment. And I do want to mention, I know I keep patting myself on the back about this rest defense idea that I brought up in the last month, but against PSG and against Huesca, that Barca dominated once again with their rest defense, and Busquets' positioning in this 3-5-2 is the most important part of that. And I would be regressed to say that Pedri, who's got a Spain call-up this week at 18, same as Ansu Fati, Pedri's another huge part of that. And the last 2 points, as I'm going to throw it back to you, is here. Messi's positioning, we'll talk about him against Huesca. So I don't want you to respond with Messi, but you can respond with Dembélé and Griezmann. Because while people said Griezmann was once again completely in the shadows against PSG and not really making a mark on the game, that's not true at all. When you look at the heat maps, every time Messi dropped deep, Pedri would be within 5 to 10 yards of him, a la Xavi or Iniesta, right? He would just back in the day, that's how they did it. Messi drops deep, receives the ball. And unlike being on an island and dribbling right at PSG, Messi would receive the ball, and his first look was about 15 to 20 yards in between the midfield line, which is where he would drop deep to receive, and the opponent's back line. And he would look in between those lines, and who was there every time? Antoine Griezmann, always being the outlet for that 15 to 20 yard diagonal to his left pass from Messi to Griezmann. And once Griezmann was in that spot, usually it was Messi who would run straight past that midfield line and continue through the line before the defense had time to step and receive the ball again to make that final decision, whether it was back to Griezmann, Dembélé, or usually out to the wings to Alba and Dest, who were making those overlapping runs out on the wing. And that gave, and giving Messi that wide open ball in the middle of the field, right before the defense can step, but getting in behind that midfield line, that was basically Griezmann's job, to be that release valve. Now, people can ask, can Ansu Fati do that job? Probably. Can Pedri do that job? Yes. So you have other players that, if Frankie de Jong moves back into interior spot, basically takes Pedri's spot, and then Pedri moves forward into Griezmann's spot, you could argue that Pedri can do that job as well as Griezmann, and Griezmann's not really adding the scoring punch. The other wrinkle to that is Dembélé as this nine experiment. And I don't want to taint your thinking with why it's not been as bad as people are complaining about, because you hear the same complaints about Dembélé a lot. But I want to hear what you think of this. I guess you could call it a Dembélé as a number nine experiment. I think that's what it really is. He's playing along the center backs. He's playing those half...
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Faces.
Okay, lots of points thrown in there. I think the Griezmann point, let's go for that one first. I think that Messi's influence is so large in this team, and it has been so large over the last 15 years, that you've had world-class superstars diminishing their value, basically, or at least diminishing their shine. So when David Villa came, he was the main goal scorer in Spain, the national team, that is, and the main goal scorer in Valencia. He comes to Barca, and he has to reinvent himself. He ended up as a winger. Terry Henry,
that's the best one. Terry Henry, he got old so fast, but he didn't get old so fast. He just played with Messi. And that was exactly. The only thing. Yeah.
Exactly. So Thierry Henry, you know, he was Arsenal. He was everything at Arsenal. There was a lot of good players as well. Obviously, let's not exaggerate. But in an attacking perspective, he could go wherever he wanted. He had the freedom that Messi has at Barca. Obviously, different players, different areas of influence. But he had to reinvent himself. Ibrahimovic never really worked out because he was going to be the nine reference. But as you just explained with Griezmann in a different way, Ibrahimovic's area of influence is a space that Messi normally runs into, or he dribbles into, or he does 1-2s into. So having Ibrahimovic as a more static sort of striker was never going to help him. And the list goes on and on and on. And fast forward to Griezmann now, well, he has to do other things. He has to reinvent himself. I mean, luckily for Griezmann, he comes from Atletico Madrid and he's learned the Simeone way. So all the hard work, all the relentlessness, all the stamina, all the sacrifice for the team, he's got it sort of in him. I think if he didn't have that, to be honest, Griezmann would have been gone from Barca or sat at the bench at Barca long, long, long ago. I mean, let's not go into the price tag. Hugely expensive. Is he worth the money? From a goal-scoring perspective, in terms of raw numbers, probably not. And for not just the numbers, because the numbers, I don't think they're awful. I don't think they're great, but I don't think they're awful. I think it's more about the feeling of what this player used to do at Atletico and that we're not seeing week in, week out. We see whenever even Messi's not playing or whenever Messi's assisting him. But the Griezmann at Atletico is impossible to see at Barca because Messi's here. And that's the thing. That's the point to be discussing. Dembélé as the number nine. Well, it is an experiment, but the thing is, Koeman doesn't have any other number nines, really. I mean, you've got Braithwaite, who, let's face it, he was a very good striker at Getafe last year, you know, and he hasn't really broken through into the team. He's been given several chances. I mean, he's been training with Henrik Larsson for the last 12 months, and he probably is better than he was, but Koeman definitely doesn't trust him enough, otherwise he would be starting every single game. He wouldn't have to be trying with Griezmann as a striker. He wouldn't have to be trying with Dembélé as a striker. So obviously there's no alternatives. I think in the last transfer window, it was clear that Koeman really, really wanted Memphis Depay, but he never came. There was no funds. And he's just trying to make do with everything he has. I think that if Ansu Fati was fit, he would probably be the first option.
Yeah, that's the point. It's Ansu Fati. Yeah. That's actually the answer to this. That Braithwaite coming over, as you mentioned, from Leganés last year, he's a number nine. He's Barcelona. I mean, he wears the number. He wears the number nine jersey, yeah. But he's a backup. He's a starter on a second bottom half team in the Liga, and he is, I mean, barely a backup. I think he's a backup for Real Sociedad or for Athletic Club or Real Betis, that level. And then at Barcelona, he probably even shouldn't be in the squad. I mean, and it was a desperate plan. Still, I mean, the scars of the Bartomeu era. This is no disrespect to Martin Braithwaite. I mean, we've said it many, many times that I like the player. I think he's a good player. I think he's a solid player that I'm going to root for.
Very professional.
Very, very professional. Yeah, very, very professional. But, I mean, as you said, Ansu Fati is the answer here because Ansu Fati can come in as the winger. He is the left winger, if you will, but he is the most influential player in the box that Barcelona has. He is a threat in the near post, as a far post. He's a threat on headers. He's a threat with the ball on the ground. And he's a threat physically. So, yes, Ansu Fati is the answer to all of these questions and all these experiments that Koeman has had to do.
For sure. But then the same as Mingueza. He's playing. This is Dembélé as a number nine. He's playing there because all the other options are worse, basically. Yeah. Mingueza wouldn't really be a starter. He would at best be a squad player. But, you know, he's now starting because of the reasons that we've said. And to be honest, great, because he's a La Masia graduate, someone who is an example for the youngsters coming behind him, and he's giving us all hope and rejuvenating our squad. So for Mingueza's part, really, really proud and really pleased. Now, in terms of Dembélé, well, he's someone that he's clearly not a striker, let's face it. But the thing is, he's incredibly speedy. His pace is, I want to say, unrivaled. And if we were playing against a team that, you know, counter us, or, you know, he's closer to our level, say, like PSG would be, or I don't know, like your Chelsea's, Manchester United, Juventus, like your big teams in Europe, Madrid, obviously, Atletico, So that was someone who could actually make the difference. I don't think his goal scoring boots are put on the right way, but you know, they never really have been. But the thing is, if you give Dembele like three or four balls in a match, it's very likely he's going to be in front of the keeper at least twice. And then if he's focused and fortunate enough, then he may score a goal, and that could be the decisive factor in the game. That could win you the whole game. And in an European competition, which unfortunately we don't have right now, it could be the difference between staying at home or qualifying for the rounds. So I think even all the options, they're all experiments really that Koeman has tried this season. I think Dembele is probably the best one. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not in social media. I don't know what people are saying. But what I do know is that a striker at Barca needs to be making a difference. And I think Dembele, especially against teams that attack us, could be a very good option. The best one in the market? Definitely not. But the best one we have? Definitely.
Yeah, and I think all of this runs, as we continue to mention, all of this runs through Lionel Messi. And I don't, it's funny because we host the Barcelona podcast and we get into these weeks or these runs because we understand what Messi is. People, I mean, how do you change from talking about the best player in the world and continue to come up with new things week in and week out? And the two goals yesterday, as I was always reminded, that there's so little to say more about him and what he's capable of. And what I do want to say, first I'll start with the stats and then we can talk about Messi, in that in the 90 minutes he played yesterday, where the only thing I could argue is that Koeman probably should have taken him out because he was a yellow away from being suspended against Real Sociedad, but you also trust that your captain knows how to not get a yellow in that situation when your team is up 3-1 at that point. So in those 90 minutes, he had 124 touches, he had the two goals, he had two shots on target, so both that were on target were goals, of his total six shots. He also had the assist, he had three key passes, 87% passing accuracy, 81 of 93 in that category. And most impressively this time around, he had 5 of 6 successful dribbles. So he didn't really give the ball away as much as he normally does against a Huesca side that I thought was pretty defensively sound and built to be prepared to stop Messi. And they, like many, many teams before him, could not. Now, the thing I want to add, the new wrinkle to Messi, because that's what we try to do. We try to figure out other than say the record, because the new record is by the time that we speak next, he's going to be he'll have the most appearances in Barcelona history with 768. He's at 767, tied with Xavi, so he's one away from moving past him. And so if it feels like Messi is FC Barcelona, he is. He's played more matches for the club than any other player, and certainly it's almost a healing, I think, for us as Culés, of what happened over the summer and the feelings of Messi leaving, or even the eventual feelings of Messi leaving if he leaves this summer, and this peace that Culés had to get with Messi, that Messi, as we've been talking about, whether he was voting in the election or seeing him as a captain now, he cares about this club more than almost any human on earth. And in today's, I think we're definitely in today's, in 2021, when, you know, we're big NBA fans, we're big basketball fans, right? So back in the day, Michael Jordan, even though he hated the Bulls ownership, he hated, the name is slipping me at the moment, but I mean, the owner even, Jerry Reinsdorf, he didn't really get along with. And he was so frustrated with their management, yet he was always a Chicago Bull. The same could be said of, I mean, Larry Bird was always going to be a Boston Celtic. Magic Johnson was always going to be a Los Angeles Laker. And now that generation is frustrated at the younger generation, whether it's James Harden forcing his way out of the Rockets or Kyrie Irving, again, what he was doing with the Boston Celtics, and these superstars just kind of teaming up and picking these teams. And the same, I think, or more so, can be said of football, that if you pay a player's release clause, it's so hard to have those one club players, right? Like even Joaquin for Real Betis, he's Real Betis till he dies, but also he played for Valencia. He was around, right? So to have these one club men, because of how much it costs and wages go up every time you have a new contract. And so for Barca to extend the amount of money that they have for Messi over the course of his career, it's hard to be at one club for a long, long time. And for Messi to represent Barcelona in the way he does, it's difficult to explain that. And the final thing I want to say, and almost what gives me hope, that whether he leaves or stays, I think is still beyond the point. Because now I think you can see, I think, not to say I'm ready to get hurt again, but you can see now with this young core around him, with the way that he's playing and picking the ball up, as I'm mentioning, in Koeman's system, whether it's the 3-5-2 or the 4-3-3, his positional sense has always been good, yes, but defensively, it's night and day now. And from the new year and the way that he presses and the moments he's choosing to press and the way he's conserving his energy is night and day to what we saw in the fall, where he had so many wasted chances, he had so many wasted moments where he would press and it just seemed disjointed, where there were times when Busquets and De Jong would be yelling at people because one of them would go to press And Messi was not in the right spot where he needed to be in that rest defense. And they're not going to yell at Messi, obviously, but they're going to yell at the whole, you know, the whole unit. But he seems to be in the right spots defensively now as well. And this Messi that we're seeing since 2021 started can play for Barcelona and can win for Barcelona for the next year or two. And I think that is the why I'm ready to get hurt again. Why it's going to hurt if Messi leaves again. But that's okay. You know, it's not a personal thing about why he can leave. But I just mean what we're seeing on the field. That Koeman cracked the code. He found a way to get the team younger and to get these young players playing in a system and gaining confidence, but having Messi be their leader. This is for me, as what I said about if Messi stays, this is a perfect situation. This is the perfect scenario and what I dreamed about happening this year for both the youngsters and for Messi.
Yep, and he's done the job that basically I was criticizing him for not doing at the beginning of the year, which is taking the baton and opening the doors for this new generation. I think that if Messi goes this summer, then there's been enough growth around him so that someone can take sort of the key protagonist key, and then he could be, you know, making even more money somewhere else, maybe PSG, maybe Manchester City, who knows. But I think that Messi's duty, if he doesn't owe us anything, because he's given us 20 years, however many years it is now, of greatness. And obviously, we've paid him really well as a result, so let's not forget that. But I think that if Messi decided to walk this season, this summer, at the end of the season, then so be it. You know, we'll have to accept it, and we'll have to forever be watching YouTube videos of how great he was when he debuted. The hat trick against Madrid when he was like, 17, 18 years old? Not even that. And I know it's only Huesca, right? But the last two goals he scored, the cracker against Huesca and that incredible, like so angry shot from basically his house against PSG was just mind blowing. Like to see this guy at 33, 34 years old doing this at this level, in these matches of that importance is extraordinary. And, you know, we've been doing the podcast for nearly a quarter of a thousand. When you say it like that, it's quite a big number. A quarter of a thousand episodes, that's 249 today. And we've tried to describe Messi in every episode, and we always fail to do him justice because he's better than anything we can possibly say. But, you know, we're just lucky that he's chosen to play for Barca for his whole career, that he's chosen to stay for as long as he has. And that in this last year, he's done his best to take the next generation forward. Obviously, that's not to say that he's certainly leaving. I mean, all the reports, I was listening to Catalunya Radio again today, and all the reports from Barcelona is that basically he sees himself in the youngsters so much, and he's so bought into the philosophy that Koeman is bringing, and the freshness and the vision of the team and the club getting better, obviously. Laporta being chosen is not really going to hurt him very much, is he? So he's the one that basically enabled him to be who he is today and reach the peak that he reached 10 years ago, even 7 years ago, arguably, because he laid the foundations. This is Laporta. So having him back is going to be a good thing for him. As I said last week, I don't think it's just about money. I think money matters, but I don't think it's a decisive here. I don't think that many clubs will pay him what he's being paid now, or even a tiny bit more, or even a tiny bit less. I think the difference would be larger than we probably expected had he left last year. So long story cut short, I would say that Messi's closer to staying than to actually leaving this summer. If he left, obviously, and he renewed for, say, 3 years, you need to be mindful that you'd be paying a 37-year-old Lionel Messi a lot of money. I'm not saying that he would be in a wheelchair in 3 years, obviously, or, you know, only being able to manage his head. I mean, his legs would still be there. His physicality would still be there, but obviously he would be 3 years older. He would still be as conscientious and as professional as he's always been. He will continue to be an influence, blah, 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 blah. But ultimately, if you're going to pay him big bucks, which obviously if he is to stay, we will have to, you need to take into consideration that at 36 and 37, that really should be decreasing in my eyes. But that's not to take away anything he's ever done. It's just trying to ensure the long-term future and sort of the takeover of the next generation that we're already beginning to see properly taking place and being successful.
Yeah, I compare it to, in the NBA, LeBron James, and Messi is beginning. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo, you throw him in there as well. He's older than Messi. He's a year and a half, 2 years older than Messi. And the level that these men have sustained, I think for Messi, the moments are the things that we're going to remember. Of course, I was saying yesterday, the Real Betis goal, the chip from 2 years ago, that I was considering, and just remembering all those goals. And, you know, we'll watch, as you said, we'll watch the highlights forever. But I think more impressively even than the totals, because Messi, here's a new total, but he's the first player in the Liga history to score 20 goals in 13 consecutive seasons, or 20 goals or more every year. And that's a lot of goals in the Liga, and he's done it 13 years. So for me, I think most impressively, yes, the totals are going to be astronomical and insurpassable for at least a long time until the next Messi comes around in 20 or 30 years. But his longevity, the thing, and LeBron James the same way, the level that they've played at, and not only the level, but the fact that they have gone deep in Champions Leagues and how many Copa del Rey finals, semifinals, they go deep in every competition. They're fighting for every La Liga trophy. So to play not only, if you consider, so let's say there's regular minutes, right? So there's if you're a team that, I'm not going to throw a team at Athletic Club under the bus, but I will, because they're not really ever contending for the Liga, but they're also usually not fighting relegation. So how many matches that Athletic Club have in April and May truly, truly matter? You know what I mean? And then they don't get very far in Copa del Rey. They're not in Champions League or Europa League some years. And so you wonder, those minutes aren't as hard on the body in April and May because there's less to fight for. But almost every minute of Messi's career, there's been something to fight for. And to me, that I consider that almost a weighted minute. And LeBron's the same way. He goes in the playoffs. How many minutes in those playoffs where on your body, the strain of those minutes is almost double? And so for Messi to still be at his level with all the important minutes that he's played, important moments and pressurized moments, and the fact that he continues to do this at this level this long, the question is, can he still be at this level at 37? For almost every other player, for science, for history, it tells you no, because there is a drop-off. There's going to come a moment where these guys physically can't do it at that level anymore. But with LeBron and Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi, and Tom Brady, I guess, for the NFL, is the only other guy that I really do consider in that almost a pantheon of guys that until they drop off, they're not going to drop off. We just don't know. They will eventually. There's going to come a moment when they don't have it anymore. But that is not now, and that is not until almost they decide that it's going to be the moment when they have to step away. And what level are they going to step away? Are they still going to be 95% of what they are when they decide to not hang it up, but to, you know, maybe take on another challenge, if you will, and play for Newell's Old Boys or wherever it may be? So do you have one final point? And then we're going to get a little younger with the talk.
No. Just to say that what you said about physicality definitely applies to mental as well, because all the games that Messi has played, he's under the spotlight. He's the main protagonist in every single game he's probably ever played for Barca, certainly in the last 15 years. And that it is really impressive that he's not crumbling under pressure ever and that he's still performing. And when he's not at his best, he gets criticized and then comes back and scores a hat-trick. It's just incredible. And we're very lucky again. Yeah. To be seeing this.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of criticism, what I love so much about having a young squad this season is, you know, hope, of course, is exciting and young players are exciting. And it's a lot easier to not criticize a young player. If Griezmann, obviously he would make a tenth of what he makes if he was 18, 19 years old. But Ish Mariba is only 18 years old. He's played in 4 matches, 1 goal, 2 assists, 127 minutes played in the Liga. He also made his debut in the Champions League, 2 Copa del Rey. The 2 Copa del Rey matches I thought he would play, and he did. And then he's also played in the Liga. So him breaking in. And there are, of course, remember for 4-5 months now we've been arguing, well, you know, has Pedri taken over for Ricky Puig and put him on the bench? Well, Yes, Mariba is now the one who's higher in the pecking order than Ricky Puig. And I don't think we need to even discuss this other than the point that I just wanted to, you know, wind you up a little bit. And I'll give you the easy out and say that for me, Yes, Mariba is doing the job that Koeman is asking for. He needed a box-to-box midfielder if you're going to have Frankie de Jong play on the back line with Gerard Piqué injured. And Busquets is going to stay as a pivot. And then when Busquets comes out, hey, I don't think it's even Yes, Mariba taking from Ricky Puig, like I keep saying on the internet. Maybe he's higher in the pecking order, but for me, Yes, Mariba is playing instead of Milan Pjanic, which to me is the exciting one. So he's taking all the Pjanic minutes instead of really taking minutes from Ricky Puig. The minutes from Ricky Puig is still the backup Pedri minutes, and Puig getting on the field is more than Pjanic is doing. So it reminds you that I know that you want Ricky Puig to start. I know people want him to be getting the match against Huesca, but they hadn't played in 5 days. So you want to keep Pedri with match fitness. Pedri's also 18, and he could play almost every minute of every match because he's 18 years old. And Koeman doesn't extend him that far. He gives Ricky Puig those 10 to 13 to 4-2 to whatever it may be. He gives him those final minutes in so many of these matches. So it's okay. Just be patient. It's fine. Ricky Puig is not getting minutes because Lionel Messi plays in the squad. So if Ricky Puig has to be patient for a year or two, those attacking midfield minutes will be available someday. If Griezmann is out of the club or whatever it may be. But Elias Moriba, it's frustrating to me that they get pitted against each other. For me, it's Elias Moriba versus Pjanic, and Elias Moriba is being taken over Pjanic. So, I mean, you know how I am. I'm giddy about that. So, yeah.
I'm very tired of talking about Ricky Puig, to be honest.
Well, say something nice then. What do you think he adds?
Say something nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you something nice. Elias Moriba is 4 years younger and he's much more close to what the coach is asking for.
Three years younger.
Honestly, I don't see the point of talking about Ricky every single time. He's a La Masia graduate. I wish that he continues to get great reviews from people on the internet, but what he really needs to be doing is impressing the coach in training, and then when he goes on the pitch, impress the manager so the manager picks him. So you cannot be praising Koeman for promoting the youth and you know, getting rid of your Vidal and your Rakitic, etc., and you cannot be celebrating that, but at the same time criticizing him because Puig is not playing when you've got Elias Moriba playing, or you've got Pedri playing, or you've got Mingueza and Araujo, etc. Like, I don't really see the point of constantly, because we spent the last 4 years talking about someone who's not playing. We used to talk about Denis Suarez. We talked about Malcolm. We talk about Ricky Puig now. Guys, it's 11 players on the pitch. There's a manager who for a change over the last 3 years actually knows what he's doing. And he's decided that one of the youngsters in the squad is not playing. End of. You know, I don't really see why we need to be tweeting 24/7 about this.
But I argue actually that he is playing, though. That's actually the argument I'm making, that Pjanic doesn't play and isn't in the manager's plans. But clearly, Ricky Puig, in the number of games that he does feature in, he's just in the plans like Braithwaite is. He's a bench player. He's someone who comes in, takes control of the matches late because he has superior technical ability. He's fantastic in possession. So he takes control of a game late on when Barca's looking to finish out a game. He does get minutes. He does see these games. And the role he has is to be the backup for Pedri. And that's okay. That's fine. He's 21. He is 3 years older. You know, I don't throw shade. It's only 3 years, not 4 years, that he isn't where he was younger. But yeah, he's 3 years. He's 21 years old, which is still rather young. And he's a featuring in the first team. It's not like he's playing for Barca B. So we're going to talk about Barca B later, but Alex Callado is the same age, and he's the one that I would actually worry about instead of Puig, because he's not even getting a chance to be in the manager's plans. But Ricky Puig is in the manager's plans, and he's playing, and he's closing out games, and he has a role, and his role is to be a backup attacking midfielder to close out games in possession. That is his job, and that is what he's doing. So actually, I actually push back on you that he's not impressing the manager. I actually think he is impressing Koeman, and he is doing what Koeman is asking for him, and that's why you're not seeing him or his family or his agent or anybody coming out and complaining about the minutes he gets, because I think he completely understands his role, and he's impressed enough to earn the role he's got, because he's playing over Pjanic. He is. You have a 30-year-old Champions League caliber for Juventus midfielder, and Ricky Puig gets minutes over him. I think he is in the manager's plans.
Yeah, I've got nothing else to add, man. Just leave it at that.
Well, let's talk about fun stuff.
Yeah, then. I'm really tired about talking about the same guy every single episode. He's boring.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about the fun stuff, and that is...
Sorry.
No, it's okay. We're going to talk about the fun stuff, and that is bank guarantees, okay? So if you don't want to talk about Ricky Puig anymore, we have some exciting economics to discuss. But this is a real quick point that...
Yay!
The thing you're seeing in the news today is that it's almost a story, but not a story. Laporta, there was worries that he was not going to get the bank guarantee that he needed, but just as we started recording this, there's a bank guarantee that's been signed with a Sabadell bank. It's going to be ratified by La Liga for the amount of 125 million euros, or the club would have had to do the elections over. So, of course, there was a scary thing that you were going to have a repeat election in a time of a pandemic, and certainly could Laporta have come back from that? I don't know, because Font had, you know, he'd won 30%+ of the vote. So the question would be if, you know, would that have stained Laporta from being able to be reelected again? This is also the bylaw that the president must present a bank guarantee of 15% of Barca's budget within 10 days of being elected. We've spoken about why Bartomeu would potentially be on the hook for some of the money that he cost the club. And this is that statute. This is the bylaw that means that it's possible if it were to go to court. So with that guarantee, Laporta will officially become president tomorrow. So by the time you're hearing this, if you're listening to tomorrow, Laporta is already the president, official president of the club. Now, that's all the bank guarantee, blah, 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 blah. The point that the real story here, I think what we don't know is what led to this, and I think that's where you ask the question. So his economic vice president, Juan Mejiro, as in the guy that Laporta picked to run the club's dire finances, he stepped away due to, quote, professional commitments that will oblige him to spend a lot of time in London, unquote. Other reports are that there were issues between him and Laporta. So the only thing and the only worrisome some sign, the only reason I raise an eyebrow here, Frances, is that the guy that Laporta said, hey, can you look at these finances and figure something out? That guy is the one that after getting into the offices, after getting into the club, is the guy that said, actually, I'm a bit busy for all of this. That's, and this, again, is not even on Laporta. I raise my eyebrow and say, did the economic vice president walk in, look at the numbers and say, before these go public, I don't want to be a part of these? And that's the thing that really terrifies me more than Laporta's candidacy, more than Laporta losing a main figure, more than Laporta having to scramble to find the bank guarantee. My worry is that the finances were, the economic vice president didn't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, and also the fact that Laporta very clearly said that he's not going to lift the carpets and basically show everyone all the dirt under. I think that obviously it cannot be good news that one of your key members leaves basically before you've actually gone into it. It's not a good sign. I don't think it shows, I mean, we did say this during the election. I think it shows that Laporta wasn't really fully prepared, as, for example, Victor Font would have been, in terms of having a team of professionals that were ready to rumble, to be honest. And I think that, you know, when you go into an election and you've got a team of ideas rather than a team of people or skills or reliability and hard work behind the scenes, then that's obviously going to show. Having said that, I don't think that Laporta is going to have any problems finding first the money to run to be the president. He's already run, he's already won. I think that there are so many businessmen in Catalonia that are desperate to associate their brand, their name to FC Barcelona, that I don't think that that's going to be a problem at all. Obviously, finding someone who is capable, who is ready and is willing to do it in terms of the economic presidency or vice presidency or the economic sort of department, etc., call it whichever way you want to call it, that's going to be what the trick is. But then again, when the sources voted Laporta, they voted him. They didn't really vote anyone around him because no one really knew what the program was. No one really knew what the names were going to be. So they basically said, well, he won 10, 15 years ago. He clearly knows what a winning team looks like. Let's give him a chance and see what happens. But, you know, when you go and you vote something that isn't fully baked, put it that way, then these things can happen. But I just hope that he manages to use all of his charisma and contacts and popularity to get someone to do the job that we need him to do. And hopefully everything is well and everything is successful. I'm not sure it will be, but there you go. Let's hope they can work it out.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny that you see the complete opposites of stories, is that not only is this story going on in the background, but then on the cover of all the papers is transfer targets and all this money that's going to be spent, right? It seems like there's a difference between selling papers and what's happening at the club. Obviously, we know that finances are dire. So instead of actually talking about transfer targets, what I'm going to do is I had a video on YouTube. I'm going to send everybody go over there. I gave grades and likelihoods of each of these transfers. So some of these are not going to happen at all, but for some reason the papers are pushing it and have been pushing it for a while. But the names we are hearing in the last few weeks and more recently just now, I'm going to give you the whole list of names, Frances. You pick one.
Okay.
You pick one that you said, hey, not only do I think that's possible, but I would like to maybe see that player at FC Barcelona. Or
Shall we play possible, impossible, nonsense?
Well, there's a lot of nonsense here. Give away my grades. You know, there's a lot of... Yeah. You're a school teacher, so you're a lot... Let's put it this way. if you gave the same report card I did, and you brought that home to... If your kids brought that home, you would not be a happy parent. Let's put it that way. Those grades are not very... Some of those grades are not very high. But so here's the list. Eric Garcia actually gets a pass-fail. This is going to be a pass. He's probably going to be there. He's coming. Coming on a free transfer. He's going to be cheap. We've talked about him before. Again, I take
Can I just jump in and say, can I just say one or two sentences?
Sure.
Can we do it like that?
Yeah, yeah.
So Eric Garcia, if he comes on a free transfer, which obviously is the only way he's coming now, he would add the team. I don't think he's definitely not the finished product, but a Spanish international that comes for free and knows the club, yes, please.
Yeah, he's 20 years old. Before I kick him to the curb or say I'm done with him, he's, again, 20-year-old center back who knows the club, was a captain at the cadet. Ah, so come on. Eric Garcia, so he's not on the list. All right. Erling Haaland.
Great player, possibly with Mbappe, the most promising player in the whole of Europe. He is someone who would be incredibly expensive. I think that he, at the same time though, I think he would be much more expensive in 2, 3, 4, 5 years' time. So if you are going to sign him, you may as well go now. But with the finances of the club being what they are, I think that's pretty much science fiction, really.
Yeah, but I also do think that he is the player that that the club is going to be going after. He is the big player that the club wants.
Yeah. If you've got any money, you try and spend it on a big player. We've been saying that for 250 episodes. So, agreed.
So I guess it would combine these two, Memphis Depay and Jorginho Wijnaldum, two players that Koeman wanted, but I actually think they're different. I think Depay is still possible, and I think Wijnaldum, because of ES Moriba, it's probably less likely.
Well, as I said before, players that come on a free transfer are welcome, but obviously if we're in a situation that we even have to watch their wage, and also they both seem to be players that Koeman wants. I think that if they are to come, it's because Koeman is certainly staying. I would say that if Wijnaldum comes, he's going to take some minutes off possibly Lash Muliba, maybe some of the other midfielders that we mentioned before. Who knows? But I think that if he was down to me, I probably would not bring him, and I would continue to give the time to the La Masia graduates for them to continue to grow. I think Memphis Depay, especially if Koeman is staying, is someone that he really wants. I think it's about time we gave him at least one signing. And I think no one can disagree that this team needs a center forward. And if we cannot get Haaland, we can get Memphis Depay for technically free, then go for it.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence about Depay. But next one is Youssef Demir. You don't know who that is. So why do we even... I gave that one a D minus. That's the one grade I'll give away. He's a 17-year-old, plays in Austria.
Yeah.
That the agent... Yeah. I think an agent leaked something that, Barcelona's interested. So did you know that Barcelona was interested in us when we played, Frances? So
I've read about it. I have to admit, I don't really know him. But I think that whoever that agent is that's leaking things out, he's done really well because apparently every team in the whole world that matters is interested in this guy. So we'll see. He may be very good. We just don't know him just yet.
I mean, if he's so good, we should go after him. Maybe he can be a third co-host for us someday, but I don't know. How about David Alaba from Bayern Munich?
Right. I would say that, again, if he's coming on a free transfer, that's the only way we can sign anybody. I think that we could be stronger at the back. I think that someone of his experience would benefit the team. But then again, if he's going to come and break the bank in terms of salaries, then I don't think we need another vaca sagrada. You know, we don't need another big signing that would not add as much as they should, especially on the pitch, which is where it really matters. So I'm not convinced.
Yeah, for Alaba, I'll give away what I said about him was that he's asking for 18 to 25 million euros, and that is a lot. For the wage bill, that's too much, and it's just too much. And so I think is happening is that he is 95% over the line to Real Madrid, and his agent is using the interest from Barca or the perceived interest from Barca to continue to get as much out of Real Madrid, because of course Real Madrid doesn't want him to go to Barca, and Barca doesn't want to have him go to Real Madrid. So manufacturing that bidding war helps you get most on the back end. Alaba's turn of talent, he would be a perfect player. Of course, he can play at left back, he can play in the midfield, but not really. But he actually plays basically as a left center back. And that is exactly what Barca, he'd be an upgrade of Lenglet and Umtiti and even Araujo, who's played there. He is one of the best in that position in the entire world. So he would fit right into the starting lineup. He's a great, great, great player. Nothing more to say, but I think Kules are going to have to get used to the idea of him in a white shirt. So, all right, we've got, Juan Bernat, Brian Heal, Julian Nagelsmann as a manager. I think all those are, I don't need to touch any of those at the moment, but the final one we'll wrap up with, Frances, transfer targets, is Sergio Aguero.
Okay, so Sergio Aguero, a fantastic player when he used to play for Atletico Madrid, who obviously went to England and made his name even larger for Manchester City. Key player, Someone who I've really enjoyed watching from a distance, someone who understands the Guardiola way, someone who is very close to Lionel Messi, should be ticking all the boxes. However, at 32, not having really played much football this season, coming back from injuries, and arguably being past his best, I don't know how beneficial it would be to have him. I think that if he could come in for 30, 35 minutes in the second half of matches, then he may be useful. But then again, he's not going to come for free. I mean, he's coming for free. He will come on a free transfer, but he will come with a very hefty wage that I don't think we should be spending on someone of that condition, to be honest. And also he will block and take time away from others coming through and establishing themselves. So in this case, obviously, I'm thinking Ansu Fati. So possibly not for me.
Yeah, right. Is he the upgrade to Brathwaite that's worth spending money on? I think if the club was flush with cash and there was all of these opportunities, then sure, take a flyer on him. Because just like what I had talked about Messi, we don't know where that cliff of Messi is. But for Aguero, the question is, with those 12 appearances and the injuries this year, did he hit his cliff? And is he already on the other side of that cliff? And that's a question that obviously we don't have the answer to, and it would be scary to see. So I think the idea that I've heard that he would even come if Messi left, which, again, wouldn't make sense. But I also don't think Messi needs him to come to as a bargaining chip to stay at the club. I think Messi's going to either stay or leave, irrespective of whether Aguero's there or not. So, yeah, so that's where we go with Aguero. As I said, check out that YouTube video. I did it last week. It's over on the YouTube page, and that's like my official grades and a little more explanation on the Brian Heal and, again, Bernat and Julian Nagelsmann and all that stuff. But, okay, where we end the show is a lot of positivity. We don't always talk about Barca B and the Barca Femini, but I have to end the show by talking about both of them because the Barca B, the job that Pimienta is doing this season is, in particular, is spectacular. This is his masterclass this season as how to manage in the third division, how to manage young players. I had mentioned at the start of this year, I was worried, not that you're worried about promotion, because it doesn't really matter if that team is playing in the third or second division, especially if you're getting Mingueza and Ish Moriba and, you know, even Puig left last year. So if you're getting all of these promotions, it's okay. Araujo left last year as well. So you're getting all these promotions to the first team, and that's what Barca B is for. It's a feed the first team good players. Okay. That said, Pimienta has fed the first team with a ton of players, most recently Ish Moriba, and yet he is still tied for top in the group with Gimnastique and ready for those the promotion playoffs again. He had yesterday, or 2 days ago rather, 13 injured or unavailable players for a team that is, again, a young team as well, in teenagers who need games and need continuity, okay? Some of the names I want to throw out there, Nico Gonzalez, who since Alejandro Orellana, who I've spoken about on the show before, Nico Gonzalez is the son of Fran Gonzalez, a former Barca player even, and a longtime Deportivo La Coruña player. He has been playing at the pivot position. He's played a right back this year. He's played a center midfielder. He's played a pivot. He is giving you serious Sergio Roberto vibes. And you could argue that at 19, he has the potential to be an upgrade, even if Sergio Roberto somewhere down the line. So a credit to that player. And then with all the players that he had missing, the courage that Pimienta had to start 16-year-old Gabi, a 16-year-old, gets a start against Espanyol B in that derby, which is always a difficult derby, even in the third division. And then he also brings Angel Alarcon, a winger who's also 16. He comes off the bench in the second half, makes his debut when Barca are just up 1-0. And Ray Minaj, who is out with a yellow card accumulation, one of those 13 players who is unavailable, instead he starts Gerard Peque, is the nickname, Fernandez. He's a tiny diminutive center forward, but he gets a start and scores what is basically a golazo. It was a one-touch from across from Callado. Callado's still the best player. You know, the question here is, what's Callado's future at the club? We can get into that, I think, over the summertime. But I just want to make the point that the job that Pimienta has done, if you think Koeman has done a good job, Pimienta had his list of things he needed to do this year, which is get guys promoted to the first team, which is somehow still contend for a spot in the second division at the end of the year, which is third, still bring in the next generation after that. So you're talking about the 16, 17, 18-year-olds, and make sure players are improving. And he has resoundingly gotten A+ in every one of those categories, to go back to our grades as we continue to give grades. And I just want to mention that, you know, there are compliments to Pimienta, and there are an idea that, hey, he should be the first team manager. He's earned it. What he's earned is being the Barca B manager for as long as he wants to be the Barca B manager. He has been the perfect man for that job in that moment. It's the same argument I make about Koeman. Koeman has proven to us, is he the man for the moment when Barca is holding the next Champions League trophy? I don't know about that. But for this moment, for 2021, in the end of this season, Ronald Koeman is the man for the job. In the way that Pimienta, for this moment, for this Barca B team, for all the things that's being asked of him, he has been the man for that moment. Is he the man for the first team? Again, I don't know. But he is the man for Barca B right now, and he has done an excellent job.
It's very encouraging to see that the La Masia continues to produce great talent. I think that having Koeman at the top, giving the chance to these players, is enabling what you're saying in terms of the next generation coming through. Because realistically, Araujo, arguably even Ansu Fati, I know that he's exceptional, but Mingueza, etc., they should still really be at Barca B. So all of those gaps that have been generated as a result of them being promoted, they wouldn't have been there. So in Spanish, it's called tapón. It's like the top of the bottle. And if you don't lift it, everything gets stuck at the top. You know, it fizzes to the top and it doesn't explode, which is what we're seeing. And it's really, really encouraging that after years of La Masia being criticized as of, you know, not being able to bring up talent, then actually with Ansu Fati came through, then there seems to be a lot of others following that are around the same age, maybe a little bit older, because he was extraordinarily young last year when he broke through. But it's very encouraging to see.
Yeah, Ansu Fati was basically one of the only players that Pimienta didn't have a hand in. He went right from Juvenal right to the first team. So he never actually stopped with Barca B. But I want to mention, too, that, age-wise, Gabi and Angel Alarcón, who were both playing for Barca B over the weekend in that derby, they are Cadet A level, meaning there are players who are playing for not only Cadet A, but playing for the Juvenal B and the Juvenal A, that are all older than these players, and they are jumping through. Mm-hmm. So I tweeted it, and it did really well. So thanks for everyone that's supporting me on the internet, on social media. But the idea that La Masia was dead or that had a lull, we've admitted in recent weeks that there was a lull in talent. But this is a crop that is very, very talented, and that's okay. And I think that's where we're going to leave it, because another talented team is Barça Femení. Barça Femení, Saturday versus Rayo Vallecano, and then next Wednesday against Man City in the quarterfinal. So that the match against Rayo Vallecano, I would not be surprised if Luis Cortes really rotates there to prepare for Man City. Man City is no easy match this year. They have two Americans that I've been watching for a long time, and Rose Lavelle, who actually doesn't play that much, and then they also have Sam Mewis, who is a regular starter. And Man City is very, very good. They have put money, just like Barça have, in their Femení program. I've said it in previous weeks now that this is the toughest women's division. This is the toughest and deepest Champions League we've ever seen. Lyon actually have had some major injuries to some of their players. So Lyon, who Barca or Man City will probably see in the next round, that being the semifinal, they are gettable. And so that means if you're Wolfsburg, who are also one of the top teams in the Femení division, but Man City, Bayern Munich has some blowouts. PSG could also beat Lyon. So that's also possible. There's so many talented teams in European competition this year in the Femení division. Jenny Hermoso right now is injured. She got injured the other day. Hopefully gets healthy in a hurry, because she is in form. And then the other player I want to mention here, Alexi Putellas, who's one of my favorite players in world football, male or female, doesn't matter. She's a top 15 midfielder in the world. But these next 2 months, she could make an argument to be in a top 10. If they win, if that being Barça Femení, make that final push and win the last five, or get results in the last five Champions League games that they have to do to capture that trophy, and this is their year, because this is the best Barça Femení team we've seen. It's the best Femenino teams for a lot of different teams in Europe right now. That's the point I'm making. But this Femení team is the best that we have ever seen. They are talented. They are deep. Their top players banging goals. Their top players assists. They control the ball. They have just the depth of this team is incredible. And Luis Cortes has them playing in a 4-3-3 that just suffocates, dominates, presses hard, does everything they have to. And again, led by a captain who's only 27 and Alexia Putellas. You know, she is an extraordinary player, and it's so enjoyable to see the Femení team succeed in the way they are. But now comes the moment. If you haven't been paying attention because they were just winning the games they were supposed to, now comes the moment when they're truly going to be challenged for the first time in almost a year against Man City. So this is the moment to tune in, and this is the moment to show your support behind them.
Right, well, we'll have to tune in. We'll have to tune in and see how they do, Dan. Thank you for the update.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Frances, for joining me again. Where we talked the first team, we talked about the youth academy, we ended with the Femení. I guess I'll give you the final word. What's your final word about what Barca has had? It's hope, right? Positivity.
Yeah, hope, positivity. Honestly, all I want is for the young players to continue to play. That I know is very simplistic, and I say the same every week, but really that is what fills me with joy. It's not the winning that matters to me. Obviously, winning does matter, but it's not the be-all and end-all. I think that we need to be challenging for the Champions League in the next 3 years. And I think that what we're doing today, not necessarily enduring anymore, because the team seems to be doing fairly well and growing, etc. But I want to continue to have fun. Like, I was watching the game against Huesca, and it looked like we were winning by inertia. We were in, I don't know the word in English, but we were winning by default. We were winning because that's a game that Barca normally wins, and both say a year and a half at least, you know. And this is a team that believes in themselves. It is a team that's being built out of circumstances. And for whatever reason, we are who we are with the players we have right now at this moment in time. But it is really enjoyable to see. And I just want to see them continuing to grow. We've got difficult games ahead in La Liga. We're not in Europe anymore, which in a way could help us perhaps even having a chance in La Liga. We've got two crucial games, not coming up immediately, but obviously El Clásico and the games against Atletico coming up still. So if we win those two, and we don't mess up in the others, we may even have a chance, which I haven't said all season. But no, it is great to see. It's great to see.
Yeah, you know, I like watching young players play. It gives me something to talk about. It gives me something to think about. And I think I asked what Mexican club meant for a long time under the Bartomeu presidency. And it's not just Laporta, but I think we are starting to get a feeling again by enjoying to watch those matches. It reminds you that Mexican club is very real. And we're trying to redefine that and figure out what that means again. I think we're starting to do that. So that'll wrap it up for another edition of the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can tap in your app, check out the show notes to subscribe. You can find us on social media. You know where we're at the Barcelona Pod or at HiltonD13 for me on Twitter. And also on Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, closed Facebook group, tbpod.link/group, deeper dive discussions and all that stuff. And Patreon, I want to thank Daniel was also a patron who even upgraded what he's doing there. So thanks to him and thanks to everybody in recent weeks on Patreon, tbpod.link/Patreon, continuing to support these shows and, continuing to support me. I want to say that very, very, very realistically and very, very simply. So YouTube, I plugged it. I've got match reviews over there. I've got the transfer targets. We've got a lot of different fun stuff going on over there. YouTube at the Barcelona Podcast. So give us a subscribe over there. And we are still, again, on our push to 10,000. We're really far away, but hey, help us get there. Then finally, I want to keep plugging. I am co-hosting The Locker Room on FC Barcelona's official Twitch channel. So you can check out over there. And there might even be more fun stuff going on over there. So there you go. There's some more stuff to talk about there. So I think that does it. That wraps it up. So thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Forza.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.